Blog Talk Radio.
They think dominant football and here we are. Let's go home and do what we gotta do. This is the hell. This is the hell. This is the hell. Take it on three. 1, 2, 3. Take it.
They wanted the show. We're going to put on a show, fight. Yeah, that's one thing we're going to do, fight.
Angry Fanatics, Buffalo Bills Unleashed, Episode 2. My co-host, Keanu. What's going on, man?
What's going on, brother? What's going on? How you feeling today?
Man, I feel good, man. You know, so far I had my victory Monday. You know, it's been a long time since football been on the air. And this back season's back, you know. Lifestyle change when football season comes. But, I'm still on Victory Thursday, man. You know, it feels good.
Yeah. It's always good to start the week with a win, man, especially when it's the first week of football.
Now, I'll tell you, man, like I said, that's definitely the truth because, like I said, when the Bills lose, man, my Mondays are miserable. They are miserable. I go to work, I don't want to be bothered. You know, I don't want nobody to talk football, especially if your team have won. Mind you, I live in Patriot country, so that does not help. You know, it's miserable times when they lose, so happy we put our week one win, man.
Ain't that the truth?
You know, there's a couple things that we wanna touch on today. We wanna recap the week one win versus the Jets, as far as also previewing this week two big matchup versus Carolina. We wanna talk about the efficiency of Tyrod Taylor, Charles Clay production, and that dominant Bills defense that looked the best they looked in 2 years to me. So without doubt we're gonna get started. So let's dive right in. First thing we want to talk about is how did you feel about the game? What's your insights? What'd you say?
I mean, I felt good about it, to be honest with you. I thought there were definitely some points I would left on the board. Not all, you know, on Tyrod, not all on one person, but, you know, I think we did pretty good as a whole unit. It was a scrappy game. The defense played very well. My only concern going forward is I got to see more than one sack in the game. I have to. That's my biggest takeaway of the thing. I need to see more pressure from that front, especially when we start playing quarterbacks who are going to get the ball out quick. You got to get to them. But, I mean, the secondaries look really good. Hyde and Poynter looked amazing together. Humber was a very pleasant surprise. Could be our Zach Brown. You know, the way he had 13 tackles he finished with all over the field. Very impressive with what the Bills had to offer. What about you, brother? What about you?
You know, I want to touch on that Poyer and Hyde. I want the fans to understand one thing. These guys were brought in for a reason. Now, I know Hyde, Micah Hyde has been, you know, a good player. And Poyer was a little bit of a question mark for most fans. I actually got a chance to watch him in a couple of Browns game before he went out injured last year. And I say, hey, this guy is very versatile. I think what they're really here for, and what I saw, is a lot of mixed-up coverages, and when they blitz, essentially both of those guys are natural corners moving to safety, which helps out when you have matchup issues. When you want to blitz, you want to send five, you want to send six. These guys are natural corners and are able to cover tight ends and other receivers. So for watching that game, I saw no mismatches out there because of that. As far as Humber goes, I mean, Humber was all over the field. But like I said, let's credit the defensive line for sure. Like, I didn't see him get pushed back not one time that game. Darius Williams, Hughes, Hughes, I'm very proud of Hughes this game. Last year we saw Hughes lose containment or shoot the wrong gap plenty of times, and it gave me a freaking headache. But it said everybody was solid. Even Shaq Lawson, he was very solid against the rush, which he was last year. But I, like you said, I want to see more of a pass rush. As far as the offense goes, Tyrod looked very comfortable. Very comfortable. I mean, he was a solid 16 to 28. looked very comfortable. Like you say, the points in the field, we can't leave the points in the field. The red zone interception, the missed field goal, we can't leave those points on the board going forward. But all in all, it looked pretty good. My biggest take from the game probably was I felt like the offensive line struggled somewhat. Now, even though we won and it's not going to be highlighted as much, I think the offensive line struggled a little bit. You want to touch on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the right side of the line struggle at times. I saw Tyrod have to bounce out sometimes when, you know, it was already a little premeditated. You know, he looked comfortable. Like you said, he wanted to stay in that pocket. What I saw, which really, really gave me a good feeling, was the fact that he looked hesitant to run. I mean, there were times when, in my mind, I'm looking at the play develop, and I'm like, oh, he's going to bounce out. He's going to run. But he didn't. He stayed in. So when you got a Tyrod who's willing to stay in the pocket, you got to hold the block. I mean, you got to give him a little bit of time. We know he's not wrestling, boom, kind of quarterback. So you want to at least give him around that two-second mark, which is, you know, it gets up there with him because he has a problem anticipating. Was a big improvement from last season. So if you're not holding, if you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing, this offense will flow. But it starts at the line. You can't keep on relying on Shady to make three. You missed the block. You know, you got to hold that block going forward.
Right. If we watch in the preseason, I think that we saw this offensive line kind of struggle, still attempting to switch from the man-on-man power blocking scheme to the zone scheme.
I
think we saw that when running the ball. The pass blocker wasn't too bad. I did see Deion Dawkins getting some time, and he was a little overmatched at times, you know, make some rookie mistakes. And luckily having a versatile mobile quarterback can alleviate some of those mistakes. But it's going to be interesting seeing how this offensive line does going forward, because I personally felt that we had the number two, number three best offensive line in the league last year, and it's going to be interesting to see if we can continue that trend and this offensive line continues to improve going forward or hold steady. And also the big thing, having Cordy Glenn back out there, he looked pretty solid in the 56 snaps that he played. Another thing we'll touch on, how did you feel about McCoy? To me, he looked like he was in mid-season form.
McCoy looked ready to post the game. Catching out of the backfield, saw him, you know, exploding for big plays. It's what we expect out of him. It's what we pay him for. That's why he's the highest paid running back in the league, because we expect that out of him. And you know what? He gave it to us. One thing I will say is, He looked really healthy. Like, and what I mean by that is every time I watch Shady run and he gets hit, I cringe a little. I cringe a little because of the fact that, to me, I always feel like there's a possibility he's going to get hurt on every single play. Even if it's nothing significant, just, you know, just a little injury, he gets up, shakes it off, comes right back in the game. But he looked like he was running strong in this one. And that's something I want to see from him. Give up one side. You know, that's what they teach running backs. Give up one side of your body. Don't give up, you know, all of it. The line provided him a lot of big holes. So I have no problem with Shady. Shady did his thing. Tolbert was an amazing surprise. You know, it's not really so much a surprise, but it was good to see the way he ran for us, and the fact that the offensive line helped him out a lot. What we can do on the ground this season should be very, very interesting. I expect us to go back to back to back, three-peat rushing champs.
You know, Tolbert, I was actually very excited to see Tolbert. Like I said, I've been watching Tolbert for years, ever since he was in San Diego. I always loved the guy. My only issue with Tolbert is I don't like having him run the ball going east and west. I'm not a fan of that at all. Let's keep the guy going north and south. I also worry about giving him 12 carries a game. I think that's where we saw the loss of the release of Jonathan Williams kind of maybe come into play a little bit, having to get from 12 carries. I would like to see Tolbert have more of maybe seven to eight carries a game, with four of those being within the red zone or short yardage situations. But I mean, it was a strong game from Tolbert as well. Very strong game. Another thing I wanted to touch on with our offense is the emergence of Jordan Matthews. He looked pretty healthy. He looked like him and Tyrod clicked very well on the field. How did you feel about Jordan Matthews this game?
I mean, I didn't really know what to expect with him and Tyrod going forward. Tyrod seems to me like the quarterback who he finds one receiver and he goes to him. It's his go-to guy, someone he feels comfortable with and clicks. Sort of like, you know, a LeBron and Wade combination. You know, there's always that, you find the one guy that just fits what you do and they can help you out. You know, it was basically what Sammy was to Tyrod. What the one play I saw that I really loved from him was the quick. I believe it was a curl route. Tyrod dropped back, looked, did his read, bang, hit him right in the gap, right before the safety could pull up, and he took off. And Jordan Matthews was gone. The way he ran the field was amazing. I even read somewhere that he was helping Zay Jones out, you know, in terms of Zay Jones playing in his first game. That's the kind of leadership you want to see in the wide receiver core. And that's something that I didn't know where we was going to get it from, who was going to step up and be that guy. Honestly, I feel Jordan Matthews is going to be a very big surprise this year for this offense. I think he'd come alive. Close to maybe 1,000 yards if Tyrod can hit him consistently.
Speaking on Zay Jones there for a second. Now, Zay was targeted four times. He ended up with the one catch for 21 yards. It wasn't much of a surprise to me that that's what he finished the game with those numbers. You know, a rookie receiver going to his first, second, third game, they're gonna struggle just a little bit, I think. But you want to see consistent route running. You want to see the right reads on option routes and things of those sort. And I thought he looked very good, very comfortable. But, I mean, I think going forward, maybe week three, week four, we'll maybe see the emergence of Zay Jones. But Charles Clay definitely came up pretty big this game. He was targeted 9 times, which obviously, as Bills fans, we heard last season, was a big issue. Why isn't Clay being targeted? Why isn't Clay getting the ball? Clay was open. And it seemed like they came out this game, and Tyrod wanted to get him the ball often and early, especially in red zone situations. And it seemed like the offense was definitely beneficial for doing that. What's your thoughts?
Well, McDermott said it best. He said the tight end could be the quarterback's best friend. And that's exactly what we saw and what we paid him to be here for. Charles Clay is an amazing receiving tight end. This is a guy who we should be looking to target more and more and more as the season goes on. Honestly, I don't see why he can't finish with maybe 8 touchdowns, 9 touchdowns. I don't see why. Honestly, when we look at this offense with Sammy Watkins gone, to me, he should be the number one receiving threat on the team. That's just my opinion. I feel like Charles Clay has the ability to be the number one receiving threat and should be the number one receiving threat on this team. He's amazing, especially the way he runs after the catch. I was very, very pleased to see Tyrod handle. I saw Tyrod hit him a lot last season. You know, a lot of people, to me, I think it's overblown, the fact that we don't target Charles Clay. I've seen a lot of times last year and the year before that where Charles Clay was targeted. It's just the offense was more of a running offense.
I think what people overblow on is that actually the first year Clay was here, Clay started off the season getting the ball and being targeted a lot. But then there was a point in time when Sammy Watkins went out, and I also believe Robert Woods may have went out for a little bit, and teams focused on bracketing Clay until he was banged up. And I think last year the same thing happened again. You know, if you don't have threats around you, they're going to target the next best guy. And I think obviously Clay was the second or third best guy on this team, so they were bracketing him. But, no, it was definitely good seeing Clay get the ball. Because one thing that's underrated about Clay is Clay's ability to make plays after the catch. It's very underrated. Very, very underrated.
Very. Severely, to be honest with you. I've seen him pull moves out that I had to sit here and say, wow. You know, the guy, once he catches the ball, he's a threat to go another 10, 20 yards if you don't stop him. He can. He has the speed, and elusiveness to make plays and make the Thunder miss. Love that about him.
Most definitely, most definitely. So, at the seat watching the first game, we've talked about Tyrod, we talked about McCoy, we've talked about the offensive line and Charles Clay, and we touched on Jordan Matthews as well. What do you think the impact going into the defense that Sean McDermott has had on just the overall image and personality of this football team since taking over?
Being held accountable, if I had to say so. I mean, obviously, we're not in the locker room. We're not in the weight room with these guys and practice with these guys. But in my opinion, it would have to be being held accountable for the mistakes you make and the fact that the penalties drop severely. I mean, if you look at the box, we really didn't commit too much penalties from performances that we made last year. I think everybody's being held accountable for their actions and what they do and the mistakes they make, and everybody is disciplined in their assignments, especially with the line, the defensive line, the offensive line. I feel they're really, really, really disciplined, and they play disciplined. That would be my biggest takeaway from what McDermott had to imply on us.
There was one point in the game, and I don't know how many fans caught it, but I know I caught it myself, where I think it was, I don't know if it was going right before halftime, and Tyrod took off running, and he ran out of bounds. And I think it was maybe about a minute or 2 minutes, something around there before halftime, and it was third down, and McDermott ran up to him, and you could tell him, say, hey, come on. And I think what it was is because Tyrod stopped the clock. Last year under Rex, we saw a lot of times where we had mental lapses from the team, from coaches, you know, bad clock management, and it seemed like McDermott was right on top of it, which honestly can be a difference from a team scoring 3 points or a touchdown before halftime, or which honestly end up being the winning score of the game later in the later late game situation. So, like I said, I think that from a discipline standpoint, not only are the players going to have to hold themselves accountable, but he's going to hold his coaches accountable as well. But you could definitely see as Richie Incognito called it, a new energy about it. You know, energy from the team. So that was definitely good to see.
There was one thing that I did notice that, again, it's the first game, so you expect, you know, certain things to be played a little more conservatively. But after the game, I didn't like the play calling. Towards the end of the game, I really did not like the play calling. It just seemed too conservative for my liking. Again, it was what we saw with Rex. It's what we saw the past couple years. You know, it's play conservative when we have the lead at the end of the game. Just don't make mistakes. Just run the ball. Don't make mistakes. And let's just bleed the clock out. I didn't like that. I honestly didn't like that because there were a couple points of the time in the game where I felt, wow. You know, the Jets can score. And if they score, it's over. We're right back in the game. We need to be able to put our foot down on their throats and not just be content with, we have a little lead, let's bleed the clock out. I want to see us move the ball. You know, they were there. When I saw it, it was the fourth quarter, and there was still plenty of time left on the clock for the Jets to come back. And in my opinion, McCown was not playing bad at all. I thought McCown played very well. There were times when I was worried with McCown at quarterback, the way he was hitting Kurs. You know, so we, going forward, I would like to see Dennison with more of an aggressive play style towards the end of games when we have that little bit of, with that little lead. Go score the ball. Let your offense make plays. We're full of playmakers. This offense is full of playmakers. Let them go out and make plays. When the time comes where we can bleed the clock out, that's fine. I don't think you should be trying to do that 8 minutes in with the fourth quarter still going, you know? There's too much time,
right.
And there's going to be way too many teams who are going to capitalize on that.
And actually, speaking of McCown, like I said, from the stats, he didn't do too bad. I mean, obviously they threw the ball a lot when they got down in the fourth. But, I mean, in the stat sheet, he was 26-39 for .187. Obviously, the two picks towards the end of the game. And actually, as far as Kurs goes, he did target Kurs. Kurs was his most targeted receiver, targeted him 9 times, connecting for seven times for 59 yards. And like I said, I would also agree. I would love to see them be a little bit more aggressive towards the game. I also like them to maybe use Banyard a little bit more here at back to keep the legs fresh for Shady. Like I said, I just I prefer the three-back system. I'd rather not use Tolbert 12, 15, 16 times a game going forward, and I also would not like to use him going east and west. But like, the play calling was very conservative to me. Like I said, playing against a better team like the Panthers we got coming up, I would be very fearful if we were calling those type of plays towards the end of the game with a one-score lead in a better team.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree there.
And a little bit more play action. I want to see more play action, too. I want to see more play action where Tyrod can roll out to the opposite side and make plays either with his legs or his arms. You got one of the best quarterbacks in the league in terms of rolling out of the pocket and making plays. Let him do that. Play to his strength. They said they wanted to unleash Tyrod. Well, unleash him. I saw many times where he handed the ball up to Shady to the left and the defense bit. And so many times where I'm just thinking, why wasn't it designed to just hold the ball, have Tyrod roll out to the right? You know, he can beat damn near 90% of the linebackers in the league with his legs. Let him make plays. You know, that's just me, though. That's just my opinion, just what I saw. I would like to see it more going forward.
And, you know, let's stick on to the accountability topic here. So I'm going to bring up Marcell Dearest because that's obviously been a big thing throughout the offseason. Is McDermott going to hold Marcell accountable? Is Marcell going to hold himself accountable for actions? Now, I saw a couple posts this week about Marcell only played 56% of the snaps on defense, and Kyle Williams played 75 snaps. So I actually researched it, and I think that the numbers and the percentage is a little misconstrued there because there was only 58 total plays on or 58 touch snaps on defense total. And out of 58, Kyle Williams played 46, and Marcell Dearest played another 34. Let me make sure that's correct here. That's not that big of a difference, especially for a guy coming off of, with a hip and hamstring injuries this week, possibly. So it wasn't that big of a deal to me. And I thought it was a little overblown by some of the fans. So what's your thoughts on his snap count and accountability? And actually, it's 34 snaps for Marcell Dearest and 43 for Kyle Williams. And actually, you can actually factor in another 21 for Ryan Davis, 15 for Dolphus Washington, and 13 for Cedric Thornton. So they kept the four-man rotation up front. So what's your thought on Marcell Dearest and actually his play in this game?
I have no problem with it, to be honest with you. People seem to forget that he was coming off a little bit of a hamstring hip injury, what it was. I believe it was hamstring. I could be wrong. But people seem to forget that he was coming off a little hamstring injury. Hamstring injuries are very tricky. They are not just, oh, you're recovered, go out there and play 100%. Hamstrings come back at any point in time. You can tweak it at any point in time. That's your million-dollar man right there. That's your big, big-time man right there. You don't want to rush him into action, especially when the rotation is beautiful. I mean, you got playmakers all over the board. You got the line rolling very well. One of the comments after the game, I can't remember who it was from. I believe it was from Shaq Lawson. He said the rotation was amazing. And I'm paraphrasing here, obviously. He said the rotation was amazing. If you're tired, you can immediately get out and have somebody else come in and then come back whenever you're ready to give 100%. So I like that. You're going to have guys on the line who are going to be refreshed. You're not going to be overplaying some of these guys. Marcell Dearest, this is a big-time guy right here. We don't want to overwork him, especially in the first game of the season coming off of a hamstring injury, no matter how severe or minor it was. Allow him to go out there and make plays. When he's tired, bring him out. Everyone's making a big deal over the fact that he had basically no stats at all in that game. His job as a defensive tackle, as a play, is to plug that line up and not allow them to run the ball down the middle. And I feel like we did that very well. I mean, they only finished with, 34, 35 rushing yards in the game. When your defensive tackles can plug the holes up in the middle of the gap, in the gaps, and your edge rushers can set the edge, it's a beautiful thing. And your linebackers are happy because it makes their life a lot easier. You know, he did his job, and going forward, I expect him to get on the board a lot more in terms of tackles and sacks. But I had no problem with the performance. I had no problem with the snap count. Everything worked out very well. When the team rushes for 35 yards, you got to give your, or 34, whatever it was, you got to give your defensive line a big round of applause. That's a big accomplishment.
Right. Well, I can see what the next thing is, when your linebackers can just float to the ball freely and not having to shed blockers and fullbacks and things of that sort, that means your front four, they're doing their job. They're doing a job, and it's not always pretty. It's always not the big sack totals. Because, I mean, if you really want to go back into the past, yes, I know people are wanting the Darius to have the 10 sacks and the 7.5 sacks that he was getting. And they still may come. But end of the day, that's not always his job. It's not always his job. And don't get me wrong. Fans, they can say whatever they want to say about Marcel Darius. I get it. People are frustrated. But those other teams that you're lining up against, they're not taking Darius lightly. He will be double-teamed. Best believe he will be double-teamed.
Oh, yeah. He's a big, big point of emphasis in terms of game planning.
Right. So there's a reason that a Humber can come in and get 12 tackles in a game. Huge. It's from the front four. So what was your take on the today? You know, we're going to do a little rookie watch here. So we spoke on Zay Jones. What was, and I think we spoke on Deion Dawkins a little bit as well, but what was your take on Tre'Davious White?
Tre'Davious White. I'll be honest with you, I didn't expect much from him going into the game. I didn't really talk about him too much going into the game. It's the Jets, obviously, but I expected them to target him a lot. I expected them to go his way a lot and pick on him. He did not allow it. He did not allow it. There was the one goal line fade where they tried to get, I think, believe it was Curse the ball, and he stood his ground and made a great play on the ball. That's what you need to do. That's what we want to see. We want to see you make plays when they go out to target you. That's going to stop these teams from coming out and picking on you for the most part. He played his gaps well. He stuck to the man. He should have had an interception. He read that route all the way out to the end until he realized, let me go make a play on the ball. And he jumped the route and made a very good play on the ball. The only thing he didn't do was catch it. Going forward, I expect him to make some mistakes, obviously. He's still a rookie corner. He's going to go up against a lot more talent than that. You know, but I believe he has the talent to succeed in this league. And with the secondaries like Poyer and Hyde playing the way they do, it takes a lot of pressure off of you, especially when your defensive line in this scheme, your defensive line can get to the ball and apply pressure. It's only going to make your life a lot easier in this zone scheme. So I liked his performance. I liked that he stood his ground. He didn't get punked. He didn't let them play him. Going forward, I want to see this continue, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of times where we see him get beat going forward by more talent. But no issue with him as of right now. I like what I saw.
Right. Watching him, he was, like I said, he was stuck to the receiver's hips, but we all know he's a great cover. He can stick with his man. He did all throughout college. My biggest issue with him and my biggest fear was the size advantage going against bigger receivers, which I don't think the Jets, with it not having Anunua and things of that sort and Decker being released, I don't think it was that big of a factor going against bigger receivers. I mean, there's going to be a huge test this week going against Calvin Benjamin at times, and this is going to be a big game for the kid, maybe an eye-opener. I mean, this guy's, what, 6'4", 6'5", 240, and he's good. So it's going to be a big challenge for him at times. So I'm interested in seeing how he reacts. And I think with cornerbacks, too, in young corners, it's not even so much the technique and the mechanics all the time. It's you're going to get beat as a corner. You're going to get beat at some point. But it's how you bounce back. How do you respond? Like when I was growing up playing ball, it was always, hey, next play. That play's done. And for a lot of younger players, they're still reliving the previous play on the next play, and you can't do that. So, like I said, it's going to be interesting, but it seemed to me that Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer also helped the kid out a lot. Their versatility definitely helps in the back. So it allows the corners to keep everything in front of them there. But so this week we have a huge matchup versus Carolina. Do you think we have any advantage because we essentially have Brandon Bean and McDermott who came from that organization in this game?
I'm sorry, repeat the question?
I was saying that we got Carolina, which is a huge matchup this weekend. Do you think that we may have an advantage going into it because we have Bean and McDermott coming from their organization?
He obviously knows what they were doing before previously while he was there. I don't feel we have too much of an advantage. I think that gets overblown sometimes when you have a guy who used to play for a certain team and then you face him. They're obviously going to do some things different this year than they did last year, so we're not going to know exactly what it is we're going to do. We're not going to, McDermott's not going to have their playbook in his hand, but yeah, I mean, it's gonna help us out a little bit that he's here with us now. He's going to know, obviously, sometimes where they're going and what they're doing. But especially now we have Tolbert as well to give us a handout. But it's going to be a good matchup. This is going to be a big, big test for McDermott.
So I'm watching this matchup. I did catch – I know you caught a lot of the Carolina-San Francisco game, and I caught just a bit of it. What I saw is I saw his Carolina pretty much beat up on a rebuilding team, sort of what we did with the Jets as well. But I didn't see Cam Newton as efficient as he has been in the past, which I kind of question what type of game form is he in, you know, what percentage. For me, it looked like Cam was maybe at 60-65% of what he normally is as far as being in shape and in game form. They didn't get him outside the tackle box a lot. A lot of quick passes. They use McCaffrey a lot to help him out. But how healed do you think that shoulder is? Because this wasn't a usual play call from Carolina that I felt.
Yeah, he's obviously not in game form, 100% at least. It's obvious to me. It's obvious, I'm pretty sure, to everyone who watched the game and watched him play. He's obviously not back to Superman Cam yet. But even at 70%, or 65 or 70, wherever you want to put him at, he's still a dangerous quarterback, and you got to watch out for him. The shoulder didn't look confident. Like, honestly, he really did not look confident to me at all. He looked like he was just going with the scheme that was already implemented to help him out. But going forward, we don't know what percentage we're going to get him at next week. He could be 65, 70% now and come back at 90%. Or 95 or 100, who knows? But yeah, it was very obvious to the eye that he wasn't at 100%, nowhere near it, to be honest with you.
And looking at the stat sheet here, it's looking like Stewart and McCaffrey combined for 21 carries for 107 yards here. So, how do we stop that two-headed monster? Because, I mean, What I saw from week one is that McCaffrey, he's NFL ready, and he's a serious weapon, special teams, passing game, and in running the ball, which I kind of wondered how he would look running the football in the NFL, and he like he missed the beat from college. So how do we stop that? How do we stop that tandem there?
Well, I mean, starting at your line, you got to be disciplined. And it's the same thing every announcer, every commentator says whenever another team has to play Tyrod and Shady. You just have to be disciplined. You cannot get sloppy. Whatever gap you're supposed to plug it. Follow your assignment and just plug the gaps and allow your linebackers to do it. Now, from your linebacker's point of view, you got to be quick side to side. We've seen that from Humber because of how good the offensive line was against the Jets. If it can continue, I expect him to be able to make plays. You want your outside linebackers to go ahead and set the edges and contain anything going their way. And then your secondaries. Your secondaries have to be ready to come up and get off the block and make the tackle. Obviously, McCaffrey is dangerous in all aspects of the game in terms of receiving out of the backfield, running the ball, sideline, I mean, the guy is amazing. North, south, east, west, he's just fast, and he's always able to make plays and elude defenders. So it starts with me at discipline. Your defensive line has to be disciplined, and your playmakers on defense have to be ready to make plays as best as they can. This is the NFL. This is the cream of the crop talent. You expect guys to make plays at times, but as long as you remain disciplined, if you get beat, forget it, move on, make a play the next time it comes your way. I think we should be just fine. I think we got the guys in place to stop them.
There's going to be an interesting chess match that I'm going to be watching. Keekly versus McCoy. That's going to be a cool
game.
Oh,
yeah.
Because we've seen Keekly. Keekly can destroy an offense. He's a dangerous player in the middle of the field against the passing game. He's almost like having another safety in there.
Yeah.
And he's probably maybe one of the best run defenders in the NFL, especially at diagnosing plays before the play even begins, which
the
struggles
talent.
In the offensive line so far could almost erase our running game. That's a different animal to be relying on Shady to hit a cutback here, a cutback there. This is a different animal.
Yeah. This is a generational
talent. So how do we take Keekly out of this game?
Oh, I think the fullback's going to have to play very well in this one. I think this is going to be a big test for DeMarco and a big test for Tolbert. Keekly, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know about this man, this is one of the best talents in the league right now. This is a generational talent at the position. You don't find these guys very often at all. Honestly, my pregame thought is Keekly is going to wipe out the run game. I do not expect Shady to explode in this game at all. I don't expect him to go for 100 yards again. I don't expect him to blow up a lot of big runs. Keekly is going to shut that down. He is that good. I just do not expect our run game to be as efficient as it was against the Jets at all. This is going to be a big game for Tyrod. This is going to be a very, very big game for Tyrod. But as far as Keekly goes, your fullbacks are going to have to get him. They're going to have to pull him up. I mean, I expect a lot of runs down the middle where DeMarco comes up or Tolbert comes up and makes a lead block. And Shady can go out and do a little cutback and do whatever Shady does to explode off of the run. But your fullbacks have to be excellent in order to stop a linebacker like Keekly.
I'm expecting a defensive showdown in this game. I don't see either offense exploding this game. I'm expecting a 16-13, 17-14 type of ball game. Someone's going to have to hit a big play. I think that both of these secondaries are relatively new. So there's going to be some big play opportunities and maybe busted coverages, busted zones, and things of that sort, mistakes. So I think that both teams are going to have to try to find those gaps at times and hit it big. But like I said, it should be a good game this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to both front fours and front sevens going against both mobile quarterbacks. It's a very, very, very interesting matchup. And both, I think at times, too, both offensive lines have struggles. We're definitely going to see, but this is the game that the Bills front four, they got to come to play. This is the offensive line that has been consistent the last 2 or 3 years. You got to make your money. We got a lot of money invested up front. You got to make your money this game, guys. So we got about 5 minutes left here. So what's your final take, man? Whatever you want to talk about Buffalo Bills related, go for it.
I'm going to go straight to the point. I'm going to go what everybody talks about, the main topic of football, the quarterback situation. This is going to be a very huge test for Tyrod. He is going to have to win this game. I don't expect Shady to win it for him. I don't expect the defense to win it for him. They're going to do just enough to keep the team in, and he's going to have to be the one to do it. My faith is going to allow me to go ahead and say he does make the plays. I think his mobility is going to help us a lot in this game. I expect Tyrod to win this game for us. That's my bold prediction right there.
All right. Well, my final take for the day is going to be, to be a tad different here, a little, maybe a little off course. But as you know and I know, we're both a part of a lot of different Buffalo Bill groups on Facebook and other social media sites. I'm having an issue with other fans commenting or testing or judging the fandom rate of another fan. Listen, we're not always going to agree on things. Sometimes we have to agree to disagree on topics as such as Tyrod, which has been a huge topic since last year, for Christ's sake. We're not always going to agree on how the Bills handle things. Yes, we get it. We're all couch GMs. But as a fan, and me being a fan, and probably you being a fan, Keanu, growing up, we follow the game vigorously. We like to try to guess at what they're going to do next. Why? Because we enjoy the game. So if I say, hey, I think the Bills are going to trade McCoy down near the deadline, there's no reason to jump down my throat.
Yeah.
It's very feasible that could happen. It's very feasible that it will not happen. But there's no reason to jump down my throat. Just because you're a season ticket holder, another person is a season ticket holder, or you pay this much for memorabilia, that doesn't make you any more of a fan than any other fan.
I hate that. And it doesn't make
you any less if you choose not to the other fans. Everybody has their own financial situations and their own life setup, but what we do know is that we're all Buffalo Bills fans. We all want the same thing. We all want to win. Now, I know it's been 17 years since we made the playoffs, so I get it. The frustration is there. The idea of we're never going to make it is there. I get it. I understand. And even at times, I have to catch myself with the negativity. So I'm not immune to it either. But let's just try to get along better. Let's just try to agree to disagree more. Let's not insult each other. We're all part of one big fan base. We're all one color. We're all one size. We're all one everything. We're all Buffalo Bills fans when it comes to this. So let's just keep it together, people. Let's be
fans.
Let's respect
blue and red.
One another.
We all bleed blue and red, ladies and gentlemen. That's it.
That's it. So, who do you think wins this game this week, Keanu?
Man, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to be a homer on this one. I'm going to say the Bills win. It's not going to be a big jump. I'd say we're going to win by maybe a touchdown, maybe less. But I think the Bills come away with this one just because of Tyrod Taylor's mobility. I think he does enough with his legs in order to get us the win.
Well, I think for me, with Carolina not looking to be, or Cam Newton not being in midseason form, and I think that shoulder's still lagging on just a little bit here, lingering, I should say, I'm going to go Buffalo. I'm going to Buffalo 16-13 in this game. So, I mean, well, that's our time, man. So I guess we'll catch everybody again next week after the game. Hopefully we have another Victory Monday, or as we call the day, Victory Thursday. And thanks for listening in. Hope you guys enjoy. Hey, man, follow us, Angry Fanatics on Facebook, Angry Fanatics on Twitter. Join our Angry Fanatics sports group. So anything else you want to add, Key?
If any of you guys want to come out and join and debate a topic with us, you don't necessarily agree, you want to praise, go ahead. We'll give you the number to call in. We'll be happy to speak with anybody here in any other group, Stampede, Buffalo Bills, Fanatics. Go ahead and let us know. We're here for you guys.
Definitely, man. So thanks. Thanks for listening, man. Hit the like button. Share us. Like I said, feel free to message us. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Go Bills.
They think dominant football, and who we is. Let's go home and do what we gotta do. This is the hell. This is the hell. This is the hell. Take it on three. One, two, three. Take it.
They wanted the show.